So here we go with Mark and Simon spoiling everything. Thank you very much for being amongst.
Funny how that name has caught on, isn't it?
The Vanguardista. And clearly we're going to talk about a movie in a way which you wouldn't necessarily if you were just going to do the review. So
yes, although let's be clear that spoiling everything doesn't necessarily mean revealing plot details, because the film we're going to talk about is...
is Elvis.
And the plot details are sort of fairly well known.
Yeah.
Okay. Clue, he dies in the end.
Tom Goodfellow, who's one of our listeners in Sydney, dear not Colonel and not Tom Parker, on its own terms, Elvis is a blast. I'm using this just as a way of jumping straight in.
Okay, cool.
He's got some interesting points, says Tom.
Okay.
It's a hyperkinetic frenzy of swooping cameras, split screens, and riotous soundscape. It's Baz turned up to 11 and thoroughly enjoyable for that reason. I know it's unfair to criticise a film for not being what it isn't, but I have to say that it's a bit weird that if you were to watch Elvis without knowing anything about the history, you would come away thinking that the man was a bleeding heart lefty. No mention of his love for Nixon, foregrounding of liberal icons like Dr. King, Bobby Kennedy and Lieutenant Uhura. And while I don't doubt the sincerity of Presley's love for the black musicians he grew up listening to, not even an acknowledgement of the thorny issue of cultural appropriation. It feels like Lerman is giving us the heroic Elvis that he wishes existed rather than the complex figure of reality. So there's a number. So there's a number of points in there. But that's we've discussed this kind of thing before. But if you know nothing about Elvis and then you just watch this movie, you wouldn't have him down as a Nixon voter, would you? Particularly.
Okay. Well, a couple of things I'd say to that. Firstly, it's very hard to think of somebody who knows nothing about Elvis. I mean, I understand obviously there's a young generation who won't be as steeped in it as us, but there are certain Elvis key points. As far as Elvis and Nixon is concerned, it is such a cultural touchstone that there is actually a movie called Elvis and Nixon, or Nixon and Elvis, you know, with Michael Shannon as Elvis. And that story has been revisited so many times, and it's actually kind of less interesting than it sounds. Because the photograph exists, and because when, you know, the archives released that photograph, you know, it became an iconic photograph of Elvis and Nixon meeting in the Oval Office. At that point in his life, Elvis was not in the best pharmaceutical health, and the whole thing about the trip out to the White House and what he was trying to achieve, and you know, the DEA badge and all that kind of stuff, I think that has been raked over infinitely. And I also think it's nothing like as interesting as it should be. I mean, now you can see the handwritten note that Elvis wrote whilst he was on the plane on, you know, airplane notepaper. You can all that stuff is there. I don't think that's actually particularly germane to the Elvis story. As far as the politics thing is concerned, it's all very well saying Elvis was a Nixon supporter and therefore, you know, he's not in any way left wing. But that's kind of a very simplistic way of understanding how politics relate to people's lives. Elvis grew up dirt poor in an area which was, you know, multicultural, in which he was absolutely surrounded by black history and black music. And he clearly took inspiration from that. And just saying, well, he was a Republican and a right winger is, you know, it might be that was where his specific voting political affiliations fell. But the subject of Elvis and his politics is really quite complicated, because there are numerous accounts of Elvis's worldview actually being what we would now think of as, you know, what was it in the email? It's described as bleeding heart liberal. He was never a bleeding heart liberal, but he was somebody who I think genuinely was more open-minded than he's given credit for, because people say, oh, well, he was a Nixonite. And I think credit to Baz Luhrmann for understanding, as, you know, Grawl Marcus does, incidentally, and as, you know, other people who have written about Presley intelligently rather than sensationalistically understand, that his politics with a small p was not a simple matter. I think that you quite rightly say in the email, it seems churlish to criticise a movie for what it isn't rather than criticise it for what it is. And I've actually now read a couple of reviews that have done exactly that, that have complained exactly about the things that aren't in it, you know. And it's a bit like, okay, so there's a story that cannot be told in its entirety in 2.5 hours, however long the film is. So somebody has taken a line through the story, and then what you're doing is criticizing the line that they didn't take through the story. Assuming that the line that they didn't take through the story has not been well rehearsed to the point of ridicule. And I think that one of the really impressive things about Elvis the film is that it doesn't fall into the cliches of the story. I mean, firstly, the portrayal of Colonel Tom Parker, as Tom Hanks said, I think is more nuanced than you would expect. It's not just that he was, you know, there are some who make me out to be the villain of this story, you know, and yet it is more complicated than that. There is stuff about, I mean, the film gets right, for example, the fact that Parker basically puts Elvis into the army because he needs to put a stop on his career. He needs to be able to, you know, hold everything off so that he can rearrange everything to his own means. And when we get to the Vegas years, the joke that everyone says about, you know, Elvis was fat in Vegas. There's a large part of Elvis's Vegas years when that wasn't the case. Elvis's health did fail in the latter years. But there's also at the beginning of that stuff when he was doing what was described as the greatest show on earth. And what Lerman is doing is not falling into the idea that the Elvis story is a three-act tragedy with no second act. It's not that by the time he gets to Vegas, it's King Lear wandering around the woods. It's much more complicated than that. And so I think if you're going to tell this story in any way at all, what you do is you have to find a way of telling it that has got a narrative that makes sense, okay? That's what you have to do. I think that's what, you know, Peter Guralnick does when he writes about Elvis's life so eloquently. And I think that that's what Baz Luhrmann has done. He's taking a line, and this is the line that he's taking through it. There are other lines that you could take through it. This isn't them. I don't think that means it's a whitewash.
Maybe what Tom suggests is if it focuses on his triumphs rather than his faults and the quirks and the fixations and the oddities, is it like, and
go ahead.
Is it like if you were going to do another biopic of Winston Churchill and you just concentrated on World War II, there would be those who say, well, yes, that's fine and he got that right, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff that he got wrong and you can't really tell a proper story about Churchill. You can't really explain who he was without looking at all the other stuff that he did prior to World War II, so that it's an incomplete story if you don't mention the faults.
It is an incomplete story, but by necessity, a 2.5 hour biopic of Elvis and Colonel Tom Parker will be an incomplete story. You could equally say that it's an incomplete story of Parker, because what we know of Parker from the film, you know, he narrates the film, but what we know about it is essentially his version from the moment of meeting Elvis. I mean, we know he was a carnival barker, and we know that, but we don't know much else. I mean, I think actually one of the moments in the film, which is, it's either a misstep or I just think it's funny, is after having spent the whole film doing this kind of funny voice, is when he's interviewed by the authorities and they realize that he's not American. And you go, have you been listening to him? You know, and it really reminded me of that moment in, I don't know whether I said this before, it reminded me of that moment in the Rocky Horror Show when Dr. Scott, all the way through, is talking like this and blah, blah, blah. And then Frankenfurter says, or should I say, Dr. Von Scott? And Brad goes, just what are you implying? You go, he's been talking with a German accent for the whole film. How did you not know that that was the case?
On the subject of the firing of Colonel Tom Parker.
The attempted firing of Colonel Tom Parker. Yeah.
So in the movie, it suggests that Elvis discovers that he hadn't left the country precisely because he's a Dutch immigrant and
who doesn't have an American passport. Well, doesn't have a passport, as far as I know.
So, and then they clash backstage. Is that true? Is that actually what happened?
Yes.
And they clashed over that specifically.
Well, okay. obviously an amount of dramatic compression is happening there. But what is true is that the reason that Elvis didn't tour was because Parker stopped him from touring abroad. And the reason Parker did that was because Parker wouldn't be able to leave the country and come back. And so we do know for a fact that Elvis did, after the 68 comeback, Elvis did have plans of going out on tour around the world. And those plans were scuppered by Colonel Tom Parker, and they were scuppered, we now know, because Parker didn't have a passport.
And was that the point that the Colonel then hands him a bill or an invoice for the services that rendered, which he can't afford?
So that scene when what Parker is doing is saying, yes, okay, of course you can go your own way. There are a few outstanding expenses. And then he goes right back to, I think the first thing he lists is 1955 petrol money to get to the Louisiana hayride or whatever it is. And then he goes through this thing and it ends up, it's several millions of dollars. Meanwhile, Vernon is also in debt because Vernon,
Elvis's
father, who has been made the business manager. The specifics of those things, of him sitting down and reciting a thing, I don't believe that to be true. But the generality of it, which is that the finances were unmeasurable. He couldn't just walk away because everything was so tied up. And what that scene does, I think, very cleverly, is it finds a way of explaining that Parker didn't exert his influence over Elvis simply by, ruthless brute force. It was this kind of wheedling thing. Of course you can do this. Of course you can do that. And here is how you will do it. You will have to pay me X million. And in fact, again, that brings us back to a point that Tom Hanks made, which was that in the original script, Parker always said no. And after Tom Hanks had the meeting with Priscilla and Jerry Schilling, I think, they turned all the no's into yeses. They are still no's, but they're no's expressed through yeses, not no, you can't tour.
Yes, of course you can do
yes,
that.
Yes, of course you can do that. And how are you going to handle security?
And this is what it will cost you.
And that kind of, that actually, I think, makes a richer and more intriguing drama, that he's controlling him by saying yes rather than controlling him by saying no. Now, obviously, that's a dramatic conceit, but it's a dramatic conceit that gets to an essential truth, which is that the relationship was ambiguous. And I know, nowadays, funnily enough, I was talking to Sanjeev about this just the other day. Nowadays, there is a kind of, code that people don't go around bad-mouthing each other around the Elvis story. Obviously, there was a period when everything kind of fell horribly apart and, Elvis, What Happened came out and everything became very, very fractious. But it is generally regarded that Elvis, he was complicit in what was happening with the relationship with Parker, because Parker said, I will make you a star. And he did. And Elvis did always believe that without Parker, it wouldn't have happened. And there is no way of knowing whether that's true. They're one of my favorite illustrations of all time by the great cartoonist Ray Lowry. I think Ray actually gave me the original of this cartoon. It's an image of three vats of grapes, okay? And in the first two vats nearest to us are standing these old guys trudging the grapes. And in the third vat is Elvis standing in the vat with a guitar. And the other two guys are saying to each other, I'm telling you, if this kid hadn't been the son of dirt poor Sicilian grape farmers, he would have been huge.
So it's quite profound.
Yeah.
I think. I don't think we've spoiled anything. I think we've enhanced.
Enhanced.
I think that's what the feature should be called.
Enhance everything.
Enhance everything. I think that's way more positive. Well, that's been another take three. It can only be a matter of moments before there's another take one.
I know. It's just mad, isn't it?
Such value.
Such value.